And we are on Perek Pei Vav, which is 86. And we are back to David as the author. We had been on Asaph, and we've had B'nai Korach, and we're going to again have B'nai Korach after this, but in the middle of all of our additional B'nai Korach, we have a kapitel from David once again. And this kapitel is somewhat unusual in that it's actually called a tefillah. It's not a mizmor or a shir or anything. You'll see in the first pasuk, David HaMelech calls this a tefillah, right, which is very unusual. And David HaMelech wrote this as a tefillah in general to be saved from his enemies. And in here, he's going to give five reasons why Hashem should help him. He's poor and needy. He's a chassid, a righteous person. He only trusts in Hashem. He's consistent on asking Hashem for help. And he always turns to Hashem and nobody else. So because of all that, he's going to ask in this tefillah. And once again, since we're back to David, we're going to see that it's interesting, at least for me, to see that, you know, the stylistic differences. That when you're in the Nevi'im and Kesuvim, that there's differences in the authors and the way they write. You know, we saw Asaph has a much more direct style. The B'nai Korach are not so direct, but they tend to be short, you know. Limited number of pesukim to make the point. Whereas now we'll see David, and once again, David, you know, has the beautiful flowing words, where sometimes we have to make sure we figure out exactly what he's saying there. So we haven't had David for a while. And this is going to have, there's going to be four parts to this kapitel. The first part is David is going to ask that his tefillah be accepted. So let's start there. We're going to start with verse Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, Tefillah le David. This is a tefillah from David. Hate Hashem aznecha. Incline your ear to me, Hashem. Aneini, and answer me. Ki ani ve'evyon ani. Because I'm a poor person and I'm very needy. The use of the word aneinu in the middle of the pasuk there is an indication, the Mephorshim say, of the intensity of the tefillah. As we go through, we're going to see that all the Mephorshim comment on the intensity of the tefillah here. Aneini, please answer me. What else is a tefillah but a request for an answer? But the addition of that extra, like aneini, is indicative of how intense David is going to feel in this tefillah. And in fact, usually when we say, hate aznecha, incline your ear, it always says, hate Elokim aznecha. Except for here, where it departs from that, and it says, Hate Hashem, which is, not sure if it says it any other place or not, but almost never. It almost always says, that with Hate Aznecha, the word Elohim. Because you're saying, bend over your ear, Hashem, and judge my situation. But here, David HaMelech is so intense in his desire for what he's going to ask for, that he's referring to Hashem by his name of Rachmanes. Bend over your ear and decide my case, but decide it on the basis of mercy. And aneinu, and really answer me. And why? I'm really poor and I'm really needy. When did David HaMelech become poor?
That was my question. When you were drifting.
All right.
When did that happen? When,
did we miss something here in the stock market crash of 500? What happened? How did David HaMelech
needy
become poor?
In what way?
Right? So needy, you could understand needy meaning as being, he needs help from his enemies. Okay? Because, you know, he can't defeat Shaul, etc. by himself. So needy, I'm willing to go on with. But poor, I mean, first of all, he was not poor. And that's a strange thing to say. You know what? One of the merits I have, you should listen to me, is I'm very poor. Well,
poor indeed.
He's not really poor at all. So there's different approaches. The Radak says that even though David was a rich person, and he had access, you know, to the treasury of the entire country, in addition to his own personal fortune, that since he was on the run and being chased, etc., he had no way to access any of this money. He was, for all practical purposes, a poor person. His money's back in the First National Bank of Hebron, and they don't have ATMs, and there's no way to get any of this money out. So the Radak says that's why he considers himself to be a poor person, because he is living as a poor person. I'm rich and shabby, because when someday I get back and my reign is established properly, I won't be a poor person. But even though I have all this money somewhere, I have no way to access any of it. And the Mitzudah says that, I think someone here just might have said it, that he felt humbled like a poor person. You know, when a poor person has to go and ask for tzedakah, they feel, it's an uncomfortable feeling. And David's feeling that way because he's at his wits' ends here, and he's asking for tzedakah from Hashem like a poor person. There's some other Mefarshim that say that interesting that David HaMelech really, we think of him as very rich, but it's not true, because he took all the money that he had and put it into the materials and everything for the Beis HaMikdash. And that really David himself, in terms of personal funds, was actually quite poor. However, the Melech is supported by the state, so to speak, but all of his wealth and all of his accumulated treasure, however many millions of whatever, all went into the funds for the Beis HaMikdash. So, the fact that it's inaccessible is easy to do. Right? If he's hiding out somewhere, how is he going to, you know, he can't trust anybody to bring him anything. Right? But it could also be, you know, he's poor because he's not just supporting himself. He's got a whole group of men with him. And he can't get enough money. Even if he can get someone to smuggle enough money, you know, to feed him, he can't say, oh, by the way, and bring me a few million of my dollars for my guys. So he really has no way to get that money. Or he gave it all away to the Beis HaMikdash. But he's saying, I am a poor person, either permanently or right now. But right now, as I speak this, I'm a poor person. So he goes on, he says, Shamra nafshi, watch my soul, ki chasadani, I'm a pious person. Hosha avdecha, save your servant, ata elokai, you are my Shem, haboteach elecha, and save your servant who trusts in you. Now, guard my soul. Well, right now, his soul is the least of his worries. Right? I mean, he's got enemies all over the place. Guarding his soul, but the Meiri says, you know what? That is exactly what David is asking for. He wants to make sure, amidst all of these things that he's going through, that he doesn't become less of a spiritual person. And when he's saying, guard my nefesh, shamra nafshi, that's literally what he's asking for. The first thing is not, oh, by the way, get rid of these soldiers that are surrounding me. The first thing is, guard my neshama. Make sure that when all this is done and you've saved me, that I haven't lost anything because of it, or I don't come out jaded, or I don't come out hating Shaul, or I don't come out any way other than, you know, progressively higher in Ruchnius. Now, this sounds a little bit like bragging, does it? I'm a chassid, I'm your servant, you should save me because I'm such a great guy. If someone were to say that to you, if your kids were to come to you and say, you know what, you should give me what I want because I'm really, like, perfect. That really wouldn't go over very well. It certainly wouldn't go over very well in your place of employment if you went and said, you know what, you should give me a raise because basically I'm perfect.
They're not saying he's perfect.
Okay, so if you said, well, basically, you know what, I'm really like a super great employee, like the greatest guy you've ever seen. It doesn't sound like a person who exemplifies a trait of humility. David HaMelech is a tremendous tzaddik. He's a humble person. Yet he's telling Hashem, you should save me because of what a chassid I am. So the Radak has a lengthy explanation here. He says, because it comes up in other places as well, in other chapters of Tehillim, where it almost seems like David is really pushing his accomplishments in order to ask Hashem to save him. He says, it's really impossible, if it were anybody other than David HaMelech, it might be that they're doing something inappropriate. He said that David HaMelech, it's just it's almost like a temimis, it's almost like a simplicity. Not simpleness, but a simplicity that he's just stating the facts. He wouldn't tell any other person that he was a chassid. But Hashem knows everything. There's no need to tell Hashem that, you know, oh, I know I'm not doing a good job. Wink, wink, you really are, you know. Right? It's like you're fishing for a compliment. Oh, Hashem, I don't think I'm doing that great. You know? Right? Hashem knows what's what. So to someone else, he wouldn't say this. But to Hashem, David HaMelech, and only a David HaMelech, could say, ki chassid ani, and it'd be a mila rather than an example of haughtiness. There's a fascinating medrash on this pasuk, which actually I have right here in this bookmark. It says, Shamra nafshi, guard my soul, ki chasadani, because I'm a chasad person, I'm a righteous person. Now, in Yirmiyah, the Navi calls Hashem a chasad. It's chasadani na'um Hashem. So the medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu nikra chasad. Hashem is called a chasad. And here, David is calling himself a chassid. The David kara atzma chassid. And David calls himself a chassid. What does that mean? Amar Rabbi, b'shem Rab Alexandria. Anybody that hears curses about themselves and is quiet and doesn't say anything and becomes a partner with a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Why? Because it says over there in the Navi that Hashem heard all of the things that the Umas HaOlam were doing, and he didn't say anything. He just bit his tongue, so to speak. And David, we know, we've seen many times before, when people came and said things to him that he could have easily had them killed for, he was willing to bite his tongue. So it says there, you see the definition of a chassid? You want to know what the most righteous person is? You want to know what the person who emulates Hashem the most is? A person who you can say any, can insult up one side and down the other, and they'll just smile and walk away. A person who does not think about their own personal, insultingness. I'm going to have to go with that word for that. A person who lets that just bite their tongue. That's called a chassid. And that, David is saying, you know what, Hashem, I'm a chassid. I'm not saying I'm a perfect guy. I'm saying I do like you do, Hashem. Just like when people do things wrong, you, Kaviyach, will bite your tongue. When people come to me and do things wrong and insult me, I bite my tongue also. So you see, I'm trying to emulate you, Hashem. So therefore, help me. So he's not saying, ki chassid ani, oh, I'm such a perfect guy, I'm a chassid, you know, I do everything right, I'm a perfect tzaddik. He's saying, I'm trying to emulate that which I see in you, Hashem. You take all kinds of things from people. You think about all the things people do and say that would not be pleasing to Hashem, but when the world still exists, Hashem is kaviyachol biting his tongue. Right? I also bite my tongue, just like you do. David always striving. You see, he wants to bite the avos. He wants to be like Hashem. Right? He always wants more and more and more. He says in the next verse, Chaneini Hashem, be kind to me. Keilecha ekra kol hayom. I call to you all the days, saying, Hashem, remember that you're the only person I ever ask for help. I never ask anybody else for help. I don't ask people for help. Only person I ask for help is Hashem. And kol hayom, I always ask only you. Every day. No matter what. Good times, bad times, the whole life, only person I ask for anything from is you, Hashem. Sameach nefesh avdecha. Cause the soul of your servant to rejoice and be happy. Keilecha Hashem nafshi esa. For to you, Hashem, I will lift up my soul. So he's asking in these first four verses that his tefillahs be accepted. Lifting up one's soul is a reference to, is a idiom meaning that dedicate all of your energies towards doing something. It would be called lifting your soul towards that. So if I'm dedicating all my energies towards serving Hashem, it would be said I lift my soul towards serving Hashem. So since we got used to sort of Asaf style now, we got to get back to the more flowing style of David HaMelech, that he lifts his soul, right, meaning I put all of my energies into serving you. And all of these things are why, Hashem, I want you to accept my tefillah. Rashi, in the third verse, it says the words kol hayom, every day. Which the simple meaning is, David HaMelech asks every day for Hashem's help. He doesn't ask for other people's help. Rashi says, David HaMelech is also referring to, in a sort of deeper way, what it means to be in Gullus, to be in exile. Kol hayom. What about the night? Never asked Hashem for help at night? How about kol yom v'layla? So sundown, that's it. Okay, can't ask for Hashem anything until the morning. So Rashi says the fact that he calls, asking Hashem every day, kol hayom, sort of a deeper reference to what he sees coming about to Klal Yisrael in Gullus, where days and nights are mixed up, says Rashi, because it looks like day to our enemies, and night to us. Whenever Klal Yisrael goes through some sort of tragedy, it looks to us like a dark, bleak time. And our enemies think this is a great time. To them, it's the shank of day. They're feeling successful. To us, it looks like night. It says, David HaMelech, kol hayom, it's always day. Hashem's brightness is always there. It's never really night, but it's going to look like it. But you know what? It's always day. And you can always call on Hashem, kol hayom. It's always the daylight with Hashem. And he personally, we've talked before, that David HaMelech has the ability, the amazing ability to address something both to a person and to the entire nation at one time. So he's speaking for himself here, kol hayom. But he also has an idea of what's going to come about in history. And he's giving a hint that as to how a person should proceed, even though he doesn't explicitly say it in the verse. So he's going to go on now. He's going to say, "Ki ata Hashem tov v'salach. Yir Hashem, you're good, you're forgiving, you're Rav Chesed, you give a lot of kindness, L'chol Choracha, to anybody who calls you. Now, the word here seems to be wrong. You should be Tov V'Soleach. Soleach means the person who forgives. Salach, as a noun, isn't actually a word. But what David HaMelech is doing by sort of coining this word, if you will, is that just like we have a word too, which means all the good, he's saying that Hashem is not a forgiver. Hashem is above that. Hashem is forgiveness itself. So therefore, he's a salah. He's forgiveness itself. Not just an entity that happens to forgive people, but he's forgiveness itself. He's good, he encompasses all good, and he's salah, and he's a forgiver. This is then to anybody who calls upon you. And he's differentiating that from a human king. To Hashem, anybody can do teshuva at any time. A person could be the biggest rasha, and they can do teshuva, and Hashem will take care of them. We've had even famous people in history. King Menashe, who was the melech in Yisrael, in the northern kingdom. One of the most wicked kings ever. He put Avodah Zarah into the base of Mikdash. Yet he did teshuva, and Hashem accepted him back. So l'kol charecha, all you have to do is call, and Hashem will listen. Hazinu Hashem, lend me your ear, tefilasi, to my prayer, v'hakshiva v'kol tachnunasai, and hearken to the voice of my supplications. Now what's the difference between tachnunim and bakashas? So hakshiva, a request, tefillah is a request to Hashem where one expresses one's innermost desires. What we call davening, that's like a tefillah. I'm going to tell Hashem what I'm thinking inside. Tachtonim are requests. Techina is a request for a person's physical needs. So hear my tefillah, and also listen to my techina. Listen to the fact that yes, I have these deep spiritual needs, but also I have plain old simple needs. Shaul's coming after me. I have physical material needs as well. It's not just going to be about the neshama. Bayom tzarasi agreka kisaneni. On the day of my distress, I will call you, and you will answer me. The Ibn Ezra says, the reason David HaMelech says this is to point out that he never needlessly calls Hashem. Now, there are people that daven to see what will happen. But you know what? I tried praying to Hashem, and he didn't do anything. Like a test. I only call you when it's legitimate need. V'yom tzarasi. When it's time, when I really need something, I call you. I don't make up games. I don't play games. I don't make test tefillahs to see if you'll answer me or not. I only call you when it's really, really important. Now David HaMelech, after saying all the reasons why he wants Hashem to accept his tefillahs, is going to praise Hashem. And here are some very famous verses. In verse 8, Ein kamocha v'alukim, Hashem, v'ein kama secha. There is none like you amongst the gods. So I'm going to read this again. Ein kamocha v'elohim, Hashem, v'ein kama secha. There is none like you amongst the gods, Hashem, and there is nothing like your works. So the v'elohim here is referring to quote-unquote other gods, which is referring to things that people pray to. Angels, sun, moon, stars, anything that people pray to, David HaMelech is calling other gods, with a little g. So, he's saying, Hashem, how is it possible that people pray to the sun because they find the sun so amazing? And if you look at the whole celestial bodies, if you've ever been to astronomy or anything, the whole thing, and you take physics and you see how the gravity works, and it's absolutely amazing that the world doesn't collapse every second. Right. And David HaMelech is saying, and who made all that? So these people, how foolish can you get to bow down to the thing that's amazingly great, but ignore the one who made the amazingly great thing? So he says, forget all these other gods. You're way above that. People find these heavenly bodies so amazing that you're the one that created them. And what's going to happen? He says, Hashem, kol goyim asher asisa yavo v'yishtachlu lefanecha Hashem v'chabdu lishmecha. all nations that you made all the nations, Hashem, will come and they will bow down before you and they will glorify your name. Which is obviously talking about the times of Mashiach, when all of the nations of the world will recognize that Hashem is the ruler of the world. Ki gadol ata, for you are great, the osei niflos, and you perform wonders. Ata Elokim lefadecha, you, Hashem, alone perform wonders. What is it that Hashem alone can do that no one else can do? What Hashem alone can do that no one else can do is create something from nothing. On the first day of creation, there was nothing, and then there was something. Yesh me'ayin, we call it in Hebrew, and in science, I think they call it creation ex nihilo. Something comes from nothing. Only Hashem can do such a thing. So once there's something, you make other somethings out of it. So you could say, well, I can make something out of something. I could take this table and chop it up and make firewood. But nobody can make something come out of nothing. And he says, you know what your biggest wonder is? The wonders you made is man. If you think about people, you know, we talk all the time in the street. Let's talk about feet, for example. And how amazing it is that feet work. And how the whole body works. They say about Rabbi Victor Miller, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that every morning when he went out for his morning walk, after davening, that he would pick a certain part of the body, an eye, an ear, or whatever, and think about how amazing it was and how it worked and what a miraculous thing it was that Hashem made this body work this way. Think about the eyes and how they process the images into the cortex. It's amazing. Yet, it's extremely fragile. The slightest thing can bring it down. A little tiny germ slipping down the steps. The slightest thing, look, the world is disease-ridden. I mean, how many people, Rahman al-Aslan, have cancer over here? So which is it over here? Is it the fact that Hashem made people, and people are this amazing device? Or is it Hashem made people and they're very frail? So the answer is, you know what Hashem did that's so wondrous that only He could do? He made them both. He made people amazingly resilient and able to do things and process things and function in their body in ways that just are fantastic. Yet He made the whole thing so fragile that the slightest push can knock the whole thing over. That's the biggest wonder that Hashem did. He made people in such a way that they contradict each other. Think about the ears and how the ear works and how you hear. Think about how the brain works. And then think about, and it's amazing, but yet a little germ can knock it out like that. How is that possible? How can something so strong, so perfect, so amazing, so supernatural, so fantastic be knocked out so easily? So Hashem makes wonders. And one of the wonders is, that's how people are. A person couldn't make something that was at the one time the strongest and weakest. But that's the amazing thing about man. That's, you make your wonders, Hashem. Now David HaMelech is going to turn slightly, and he's going to start to ask for what he wants. At first, he's going to ask Hashem for more spiritual things. He's going to ask Hashem to direct his heart. He's going to say, Horeini Hashem darkecha. Teach me your way, Hashem. Ahalech ba'amitecha, yached levavi, le'yira shemecha. I'll walk in your truth, unify my heart, so it will fear your name. So instruct me means help me learn so that I can strengthen my faith with knowledge. Now, we say in Shemot Esrei, atah chonein das, to get more understanding. Now, we don't wait till we have understanding to do mitzvahs. You don't say, by the time I'm 60 or 70, I'll probably understand a little bit and I'll start keeping Shabbos. But nonetheless, the more you understand and the more you learn, the more it deepens your commitment and deepens your faith, etc. So he's saying, you know what? Instruct me. Tell me what I need to learn. Help my intellect, right? Keep up so that my intellect will be pushing me as well to grow further. Every time you learn something, you'll get a new insight, you'll get a new appreciation of Hashem. Everything David HaMelech learns contributes towards his appreciation of Hashem. So instruct me. Give me some down-to-earth Torah lessons here. Dedicate my heart, fear your name. So he wants, dedicate your heart. The heart is like an idiom for strength and koach and ability. Dedicate his heart means give me the strength to do the things that I need to do. Meaning, oh, you're going to save me from Shaul HaMelech. But what good is it if I've like sat in the cave and I've decided that I'm just going to become depressed and I'm not going to appreciate Hashem anymore, and I'm going to sit there, and I'm not going to... What good is that to me? So first, I want you to teach me. Teach me a shtickle tire over here. Help me learn things that will make my appreciation of you grow and strengthen my heart in general. Give me co-op so that I can attack any challenge head on. So before I tell you what challenges I really need help with, I want overall strength. So once you do save me, I'm raring to go. And he says, Odaka, and I'll thank you. Hashem Elokai, v'chol levavi, with all of my hearts. V'achab nashim kol olam, and I'll glorify your name to forever. All of my hearts is referring to that he will thank Hashem with both his Yetzer Tov and his Yetzer Hara. Now, a person can use all of their impulses, good or bad, to serve Hashem. If a person has an impulse and they can't resist the lure of money, so they can become a collector for tzedakah. Any meter that a person has, the Yetzer Hara tries to convince you to use for bad. But you want it, the Yetzer Tov tries to convince you to use it for good. So David HaMelech is saying, I will thank you with all of my meters. The ones that I'm trying, the Yetzer Hara is trying to get me to use for bad, and the ones that I'm trying to use for good. And he says, you know what? I'll thank you. And I'll glorify your name forever. What does it mean, I'll glorify your name? So, we call Hashem a lot of different names. Hakim, Hashem, depending on how we're relating to him. Hashem's real name, the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, is the name we associate with Hashem doing chesed. When we talk about Hashem judging us, we call him Elohim, strict judge. So David HaMelech says, you know what? Once this is done, I'll glorify your name, your real name, and make sure everyone knows that Hashem is chesed. That Elohim and justice are only things that you do because of your real nature of chesed. I'll glorify your name of chesed, as opposed to saying, oh, Hashem judges and this and that. Yes, I'll say, but it's all because he's Hashem of chesed. Ki chazdecha gadol alai, your kindness is great towards me. Litzalta nafshi, you've saved my soul. Nishol taktia, from the lowest depths of the grave. Your kindness is great towards me. David HaMelech appreciates everything that Hashem has done for him already, which is not how most people act. If you really do a favor and help someone out in a difficult situation, what is that person likely to do when they run into you again? They distance themselves from you. Let's say, for example, let's say a person is poor and you help them get on their feet and they get a job and now they're financially successful people. They don't want to be reminded of the fact that they were poor. So they tend to distance themselves. Well, they don't run out to try and make sure they see how great of a thing you did for them. People tend to distance themselves when they get help from uncomfortable situations. Says David HaMelech, not me, not for you, Hashem. Everything you do for me makes me want to just come closer to you. Even though you have to save me, it doesn't make me want to distance myself from you at all. And you even saved me from the lowest depths of the grave, which is his sin with Bathsheba. That was definitely David HaMelech's most trying moment. And even then, says Hashem, you didn't abandon me. Now, finally, David is going to get to his actual requests in more specific detail. He says, now Elohim, Hashem, Zaydim kamu alai, evil transgressors have risen against me. V'adas aritzim, and a congregation of mighty people, bikshu nafshi, are seeking my life. V'lo samucha lenegdam, and they did not place you before themselves. So the people he's referring to, when he calls Zaydim, these willful transgressors, are our old friends Doeg and Achitophel. Because these were not people that were swept up in the cause against David. These were people that were learned people, Talmid HaChachamim, Doeg was on the Sanhedrin, that should have known better. So he calls them willful transgressors. And everybody else, they're a company of mighty people. That's the masses that are going against me. And some of them may know what they're doing and some of them may not. You know, a lot of times people go with the flow of whatever everybody else is doing. You know, you see whenever something controversial comes up in a community, all of a sudden everybody's talking about it like they're the biggest experts in the history of the world. Right? Oh, they're talking about this. Now, you know, they're repeating what the guy next to them said. If you ask them, really, can you show me the source for that Gemara?
Well, I don't know. Chaim told, you know, people just go along with the flow. They don't really sit down and decide, I'm going to start trouble. People like Doeg and Achitofel are the ones that come up with the idea to start the trouble. And all the other people, all the mighty ones that are coming, they're all seeking my life, and they didn't place you before themselves. Meaning they didn't listen to you, Hashem, because you said I should be king. So they're not just coming against me. This isn't a political war here amongst the different kings of ancient Greece as to whether Sparta or Athens is going to be king this year. You, Hashem, sent a Navi, Shmuel, to say I should be king, and they don't care. And that bothers David a lot. David would rather Hashem say you can't be king than have these people going against the word of Hashem. Please, Ve'ata Hashem, Kel Rachum Lachanim. You're slow to anger, you're compassionate, Erech Apayim, the Rav Chesed, and you have a lot of Chesed, the Emes, and truth. So obviously these are very familiar words. And we won't go through all of them, but Erech Apayim, slow to anger, there's a beautiful explanation in Tosfos about what it means to be slow to anger. The word Apayim is a plural word. And it's a plural, it says, of the word Af, which means like a face or a countenance. So he says, you're Erech Apayim, you're slow to anger with both faces. To the person who's a Rasha, who's a wicked, it often looks like Hashem is showing them a kind face. See a wicked person driving around in a Lexus, and they seem to be very successful. And then what happens after 120? They get to Shemayim, and poof, the real situation is revealed, and Hashem's anger comes out on them and slams them into Gehenna. That's his one face that he's looking at. That's his face of anger towards the Rishayim. But it looks like, I'm very happy. What's the problem? Fine, you want to keep doing Averis? Well, let me stop you. Towards Tzaddikim and people who are good, he turns his other angry face. And his other angry face is angry right now. How dare you do that? You know, we say that the actions of Tzaddikim are judged under such a microscope that the slightest little thing they do wrong brings down Hashem's wrath. That doesn't seem very fair, does it? You work your life to become a tzaddik, and what you get for it is Hashem's mad at you? That's his other face of anger. Because that face is the face that anger is pushing you, and then after 120 you come and you see that behind the face of anger was Hashem walking you. He shows his face of anger up high in two different ways. He shows it, I'm angry with the Rishayim, and I'm presenting that as a very nice face. And I'm in love with the tzaddiki, and I'm presenting that as a very angry face. Because in the end, the real anger comes out. So what does it mean? I'm slow to anger. Because you won't see the real situation of my anger until the end. You think I'm not angry with you. Or you think I am angry with you. You have no idea. I'm slow to anger. You won't know anything about it. I'm going to use my two faces, my apayim, to look like I'm not angry when I am, or I'm angry when I'm not. And only in the end, after I've been slow to anger for 120, will you see whether I was really angry. Erech apayim. It's beautiful. Usually we get erech apayim as slow to anger. That is what it means. This is it's a beautiful idea that Hashem's anger, you don't really know until you learn everything else. We say there's all these things that we're not going to understand until after 120 years. Why should this be any different? You think Hashem's angry with you because he did something that pushed you a little bit? On the contrary, it could be Hashem is so happy with you for what you did that he's giving you a little bit more challenge than he thinks you can handle. On the other hand, a person says, I did Averis all my life. I chas v'sholem, I ate everything I wanted, did whatever I wanted. Look, nothing happened to me. I have perfect health, died my sleep at 119 and 364 days. Erech Apayim, the anger is waiting for you. Oh, sure, of course. But only the pine, the faces look different. Hashem uses different faces to express anger, and he's not even really expressing the anger, because you don't know, it's a long time, Erech Apayim, until you know whether Hashem was really angry. But of course, a person can do shuv at any time. Pnei Eli, turn to me, v'chaneni, and be gracious to me, in verse 16. Tana uzecha l'avdecha, grant might to your servant, v'hoshia, and save Leven Amasecha, the son of your maidservant. So David HaMelech rarely mentions his mother, but here he throws his mother in, pointing out that, you know what? My mother was also a Ruchnistic person, a spiritual person, and she instilled in me this desire for Ruchnis. But we don't really have much in the way of details of that. The Gemara tells us David HaMelech's mother's name, but we don't know what she did to instill this ruchnis in him. But he says, listen, I am the son of the woman who also strived for ruchnis. Be gracious to me. I say imi us, grant me a sign for good. Grant me a sign for good. Vayiru sone v'loshi, and let my enemies see it and be ashamed. Ki ata Hashem, vayu Hashem, azartani, v'nechamtani, you have helped me, and you have comforted me. One of the things that we got a little used to, perhaps with the Kapitulach by Asa, and the Kapitulach by the Bnei Korach, is we started having an easier time figuring out what the main message was. Now, David is back. David has written this, I can't read into it, just a stunningly beautiful kapitel that he calls his tefillah. And read it and think, I'm not sure I get it. Yes, each verse has an important message to itself. Yes, Hashem is this, yes, Hashem is this. But you know, when I think of tefillah, I think of, you know, all the things we ask for Shemona Esrei, my parnasa, and my this, and my this, and this. And his tefillah is save me from my enemies while making sure that my spirituality doesn't suffer. And before he gets to that, he tells Hashem all the reasons he should accept his tefillah. He praises Hashem about all the midas that Hashem has that are likely to make him accept his tefillah. And then before he gets to the main tefillah, make sure it doesn't affect my ruchnias, and also save me from my enemies. And this is such an important kapitel that it's called tefillah in the beginning. We've heard David asked to be saved from enemies before, haven't we? But yet, for some reason, this is called tefillah. Whereas the other ones were not a mizmor or a shir. They had a request, please save me from my enemies. This is David's tefillah. Right in the middle of the Bnei Korach, David HaMelech wanted to remind us what tefillah is about. You know, the Bnei Korach are writing all the things they see through Jewish history, and they're giving us different lessons. And David decided that in the middle of that, it was appropriate for him to put in a kapitel explaining exactly what tefillah is. Got it? Doesn't seem to jump right off, does it? I think that we can understand it like this. David understood very well the needs of the Jewish people, as well as his own needs. We see many times that David was very concerned for his people, besides davening for his people, doing whatever he could to help his people. Right? And as a king, you carry that burden with you. That you're responsible for all these people. We see it's almost Purim. We see that in Megillah's Esther Amalka, all right? She carries with her this intense feeling of responsibility for the Jewish people, as did David HaMelech. Yet David HaMelech also has his own personal issues here. He certainly does not want Shaul to kill him. He wants everyone to see that when Hashem says you're the king, you get to be the king. And he wants it to be a Kiddush Hashem. So what he's done, he's put together something here that's telling you the following. Different parts of tefillah speak to different people. If we look through here, there seems to be a wide variety of things. We're talking about, you know, Hashem's sort of anger, Hashem listens to our prayers. It seems like almost a lot of the verses seem to jump to a slightly different angle. Almost like a collection rather than a series of leading one from another sequentially. And then finally he asks for what he wants. So what David HaMelech is saying here is this is tefillah. Tefillah is praising Hashem, asking for help with your ruchnias, and then telling him what you want. And you know how you do that, says David HaMelech? Go figure it out. Go find those parts of tefillah which speak to you, and start there. Because listen, I've given you all kinds of choices here. You want? Does this speak to you? Does this speak to you? Does maybe when all the nations of the world will recognize Hashem, does that speak to you? Focus on that. Does it speak to you more about the fact that Hashem hears our tefillahs with kindness when you call him, no matter what kind of averus you've done? So focus on that. See, you have to find a part of tefillah. In order to really get into tefillah, you have to start somewhere. And the way you start somewhere is to latch on to something and make that something that speaks to you and go from there. You can't open up the Siddur and Daven with the idea that, okay, the Siddur is about 360 pages, so 360 pages worth of heartfelt tefillahs. Not gonna happen right away. Or ever. Right? But certainly it's a goal, but there's a lot of tefillahs in there. So if you open up davening with the idea that every day that I daven, from beginning to end, has got to be a heartfelt, emotional, moving experience of me talking to Hashem, you're setting yourself up for failure with David Amar. Because that's a goal, but that's not, or you're not going to start there. That's a life's work to get to that. Do you think that when you see a tremendous tzaddik, daven, that he started off davening that way 50 years ago, 60 years ago? Something that people work on. One of the things that I once heard a big gadol say is that he was very disappointed with the biography that had come out of the Chofetz Chaim. Because we all know the Chofetz Chaim was a tremendous tzaddik. And seeing the Chofetz Chaim daven was like an experience in itself. And the book made it sound like he was born that way. And this person said, my father learned under the Chofetz Chaim, and I can tell you personally that the Chofetz Chaim struggled and worked his whole life to attain that level. He didn't wake up one morning a tzaddik. And the fact that a book makes it sound like, yeah, when the Chofetz Chaim davened to Shmona Esrei, it was 45 minutes of intense communication between him and Hashem, makes it sound like he started off that way when he was bar mitzvah. That's not true. He worked on that. Everybody, even the Chofetz Chaim, had to work. And David Amar said, you got to start somewhere. So find the part of tefillah and the part of praising Hashem. How do you like to praise Hashem? Find what's meaningful to you and start there and make that your most meaningful point. What we used to do in yeshiva, for example, slightly related example, by slichos. Now, you don't say slichos that often. And the words are very flowery and archaic. And we always used to have the problem, by the time we figured out what the first slicho was saying, the chazan's already, you know, done for the day and got his talis packed up. Right? And we whistle back there, you know, okay, what does this word mean? So decided to take one slicha, go home at night, our rabbi said, read it, learn it, understand what it means. That's what you're going to concentrate on. You have to say all the slichos, and you'll say them as best you can. But take something and make it yours. So David HaMelech is saying, you got to take something and make it yours. I'm giving you all these different kinds of things here. You know, isn't the fact that Hashem's wonders in the world, does that appeal to you? The fact that you look and see the celestial bodies and see how amazing that is? So start, when you praise Hashem and you get to that part, latch onto that. And make that meaningful. Does the fact that you can do teshuva at any time, is that really, you know, amaze you? So when you're praising Hashem, latch onto that part. There's all these different aspects that David HaMelech is talking about. Pardon me. And latch onto one of those, and that's where you start to break into tefillah. That's where you start, David HaMelech, to grab on. And that's why this is called tefillah. Because this is where you start tefillah from. You start tefillah by picking the praises that are most meaningful to you, picking the descriptions and attributes of Him that you can most relate to, and when you get to those in tefillah, you really try and connect with those, and that's how you expand your tefillah from there. And then, like David HaMelech, you're ki chassid on me. I'm emulating Hashem. David HaMelech also didn't start out. Now, he became Melech when he was 21 years old. That's pretty young. But Chazal tell us that he had spent day and night before then working on this very thing. He used to sit out in the pastures while he was watching the flocks, and he would contemplate Hashem's different wonders. So, you know, maybe sometimes think about, wow, the stars and you know, the fact that they rotate around, don't crash into each other very often. That's pretty amazing. And he would latch on to that. And he would keep latching on to different things. Oh, wow, you know what? Hashem will answer you no matter how bad you are. Wow, a person king would never do something like that. You know, so as he was growing up, he latched on to all those different ideas. Then he can come and say, hey, chassid, honey, here's what I need. Please help me, Hashem. The request for what you need becomes almost like no problem. Because you've developed so much of the fact that the praising and the descriptions of Hashem mean something to you. You know, the Shimon Esrei, the first three brachas, right, are praising Hashem. And then we get down to the serious requesting. Could be the first three brachas of praising Hashem, people are not as looking forward to as they're looking forward to the part where they get to ask for parnasa. The person loses their job, Chas V'Shalom. Next morning they daven Shimon Esrei. What are they thinking more about? Hashem's godless in creating the celestial bodies, or the fact that a job would be really great? Says David HaMelech, that's not that's tefillah, but that's tefillah with a little tough. You want tefillah with a capital tough? Work yourself up to the point where you can connect with some parts of the tefillah, and then, Chas V'Shalom, you lose your job, you're talking to Hashem. So Hashem, who I appreciate the celestial body, or I appreciate his ability to tshuva, and Hashem, I know, by the way, you'll take care of me that I need a job. Says David HaMelech, that's tefillah. So I'm not going to sit in my tefillah and tell you every single thing I need, because I'm teaching you how to do tefillah. Whatever you need, you'll need. But the way you do tefillah is you latch on to something. I can't tell you what that is to latch on to. It's different for every person. But latching on to something, says David HaMelech, you've got to latch on to something. That's what he's putting, getting here in this kapitza. And latching onto something, that's called tefillah. And the request, he's only got a few verses of request at the end here. And yet Hashem's going to do it for him. So for me, and I were davening to Hashem, and I were hiding in a cave somewhere, I'd have a long list. Hiding in cave, no good. You know, shoes have holes. I have a whole, you know, a whole long list. And I'd put a little phrase in the beginning, because I know it said in the Siddur you're supposed to do that. And make my whole... David HaMelech doesn't get so almost to the very end to what he actually wants. First, he's connecting to Hashem and appreciating what Hashem is and can do for him. And then, and make sure, Hashem, that you don't damage me spiritually by giving me what I want. But now that we're caught, we're connected, by the way, this running from Shaul stuff could stop. So, if we want to continue the muscle, think of yourself answering an inquiry from your children in such a manner. Children come in, listen, Mom, I know you're really busy, and you've had a hard day, and I appreciate how difficult it must be every morning going out to work, and those shoes that you have to wear, and taking whatever you do, and I know that you do it for the family, and I really do appreciate that. And, you know, and I only want to do here whatever you think is best for us, but do you think it'll be possible, too? Let me finish the sentence. The kid's got a blank check already, right? Assuming the kid means it. It's a sincere thing, right? If we want to continue that muscle of a father and son relationship, that's how it works. Right? You have to connect to kids that always ask one of the other parents for something, because they feel that that parent tends to give them the answer they want. Because why? Because that parent sort of understands and has a connection to that particular child for whatever reason. Maybe it's a father and son, or maybe there's, you know, whatever it is, however it is. Sometimes in a family you have that. A certain child will always ask a certain parent. Because they have a connection there, and the parent understands what they're asking. They ask the other parent, no, you don't need to do that. But if they ask their parent, they always ask, oh yeah, I understand. You know, where and there's a connection there. So it's the same thing with Hashem. You have to find what it is that you can latch onto. And latch onto that to establish that connection. That when you come to say your tefillah, and you talk to Hashem, you're not just coming banging on the door. You know, we say we always use that expression, we're going to go and we're going to storm the gates of Shemayim. You know, we're going to storm the gates of Shemayim like tefillah. Well, how about if instead we make sure the gates open before we get there? Instead of, let's just make sure the gates open. Because if you have a connection with someone and they know you're coming, they'll have the gate open for you. If you just show up and start banging the gates down, doesn't seem nearly as enticing, does it? That's David HaMelech's point here. I wish I had more practical advice as to how to implement this. It's something that you have to think about, because it's an important point. He thinks it's so important that he's putting it here. He doesn't want the B'nai Korach to go on until he makes this point. Because he feels that this is an important point to make before we get, you know, the B'nai Korach are telling us all these different things and points of history and all this. But you know, it's, well, before you want any further, let's just make sure we're clear on what tefillah means. Any questions?
I have a question. Sure. thought that, so was David the one who put all the prakim in order? I thought there was something...
Yes, no, David put them in order. Yes. There are a couple of prakim that seem to be numbered slightly differently from how it might have been in David's days. For example, Aleph and Beis, chapter 1 and 2, it seems that that might have been one chapter in David's days. And there's another one that there was always 150. And there's another kapitzel that we think might have been split in half in David's days. I mean, so that's a minor point, but there is a minor, you know, 1% thing that might have been split or unsplit. But he was a misadder everything, right? Any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay.